Thanks for tuning in to the Buffer Podcast, where we put up the freshest in content, whether it's movies, TV shows, limited series, documentaries, sports related. I'm even going to sneak in some music this week. We're glad that you're with us. And my name is Tony Tone.
And I'm Joel Krausar.
I felt like Joel, and I'm not going to step on some features later on in the show, but I just thought, you know what? I want to talk about a little music. So one of my guilty pleasure this week is going to be music related.
Nice.
And I think that's okay. Like, I think that's fine.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, it's, you know, something that I've been going back to a couple times, and
mine is trashy reality TV related. So don't spoil it. We'll just,
can you, I can just get, let me ask, is it on HBO Max?
It is not.
Okay, so it's not F-Boy Island or whatever that's called.
No,
that's a real thing that they just rolled out. Maybe it hasn't started yet, but it's literally called F-Boy Island.
Yeah, no, haven't checked that one out. That might not be one that enters the algorithm just for... It just is what it is. I my time is becoming less and less available as we get closer and closer to the school year, which is what it is.
It's, you know, when we have that hour or hour and a half of peace in our houses, it's like, do you want to spend it watching F-Boy Island? I may just try and catch like a 30-second recap when it starts to see how ridiculous it is. But it is interesting that, you know, we've, because the reality TV show series boom is what, probably 20 years old at this point?
Oh, yeah. I think like 1999 to 2000 was like American, first season of American Idol, and Survivor was that. So we're in that 21-year... I did find The Mole on Netflix. The only two seasons of that. My wife and I were chuckling about that. Well, I'll dive more into that in Guilty Pleasures.
Speaking of reality, one thing I just want to mention, because I knew that it was going to be happening, but I didn't know when or what the title was going to be. We have the name for the next Jackass movie, which at 37 years old was right in my wheelhouse. And I still think those guys are ridiculous. And I'll probably see Jackass forever in the theaters.
Of course, it's forever.
Even though they had to give Bam Margera the boot because he couldn't stay sober. And I mean, if you know the backstory of the CKY tapes, I mean, it was really Bam Margera that started it. And then they kind of like connected with some of the Jackass guys. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But I was just excited to see Jackass forever, because that stuff still makes me giggle. Like Bad Grandpa, I could watch it right now and it would make me laugh.
I don't know what it is. Like, it's... maybe it's the I'm just enough older than you. I'm, you know, 2.5 years older, almost 3 years older, that, yeah, Jackass was hilarious, but I just didn't ever watch it religiously like some of my friends did. It wasn't my thing. I don't do messy humor very well. I don't do stapling paper to people's butts very well.
Yeah.
This is not...
Anybody,
I will say,
does.
the one that they did, it was on the show, not in the movie, when I think it was Steve-O, or no, it was Johnny Knoxville, had the two broken arms and his pants kept falling down. That is one that sketch was that was great. Yeah. I mean, see, that's the kind of prank that to me is perfect, because it's hilarious and it's kind of crude, but it's realistic enough that it could actually be something that's happening, and it's putting people into that paradigm of, this is really weird and awkward, but the right thing to do is to help this person put their... So it's that whole, what would you do, kind of, the, is it the right thing to do? So I like it when Jackass goes down that road. The shooting people in porta potties is not my thing.
I could watch Preston Lacey chase after Wee Man in panda costumes, sumo wrestling costumes, in diapers. It makes me giggle. But yeah, some of it is just like too gross. And I don't, so, I mean, people know what it is, right? It's just,
yeah,
I think there's those cringeworthy moments, but nevertheless, Jackass Forever coming soon. Just a quick look at
speaking of cringeworthy,
yes,
Space Jam, New Legacies. Although
it's coming, listen, it's gonna be number one at the box office.
LeBron. I listened to an interview with LeBron the other day, and he sold me on it a little bit because he kind of said, we're not trying to, I'm not trying to be Michael Jordan. I'm not trying to, it's a whole different version that's not trying to copy it, but I'm sure it's fairly formulaic, but at least he's not saying, hey, I'm trying to make it better. He's just saying, we're just doing our thing and seeing what goes.
Well, it's just crazy that it took 25 years to get a sequel to a successful movie. I mean, that's like the opposite of what Hollywood does, but yeah. So some releases out this week, you've got Gunpowder Milkshake on Netflix, which is something I'm going to check out this weekend. Space Jam, as Joel mentioned, A New Legacy is in theaters. It'll be number one at the box office for sure. It's going to check all the boxes. Plus, the NBA Finals are going on, which are kind of exciting.
We have a big Milwaukee Bucks fan in my household. My oldest son is a huge Bucks fan, so
yeah,
we've been watching it all.
Yeah, a Midwest team in the final. I like the finals a lot.
Did you see the Giannis interview yesterday after the post game?
No.
A reporter asked him why, and I'm sorry to digress, but it's worthy of the podcast. Reporter asked him, you know, the last two games you've had to leave, you know, early in the first quarter, midway through the first quarter, and you've left the bench. Are there any injuries or is there anything you have to worry about? And he like looked at the PR person for the Bucks. He's like, because he's Greek, he doesn't speak the best English. He's like, I don't know how to make this polite, but I had to. What do you say? I had to go take a tinkle. Like I had to go tinkle.
That's so amazing. Go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you had to go to the bathroom.
Like, that's great.
You had to go pee, which is fine. It happens all the time in sports. But it's like he gets asked about the press conference, and he's like, how do I make this polite? I had to go make a tinkle. Like
tinkle.
It was so funny.
In the finals.
I'm a huge Giannis fan because he seems to just kind of be like a normal, you know, just dude who happens to be 7 feet tall.
He's a freak of nature on the basketball court. He's so fun to watch. A couple other new releases this week: Escape Room Tournament of Champions. You've got Fear Street Part 3, 1666 on Netflix, which is outstanding. Really enjoyed both of those.
So I have baseball every night next week.
And then next Friday, July 23rd, you've got The Comeback Trail with Robert De Niro and Zach Braff.
I'm all in on this one, just off the casting alone. I watched the trailer after I saw this on the spreadsheet, and it looks very interesting. I really enjoy Zach Braff. I'm a huge Scrubs and Garden State fan, so I'm in.
It'll be interesting to see if it's as good as it looks, because I'm with you. It looks like something I'd like to see. And then the last thing I'll mention next week, Friday the 23rd, is Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins.
Where are you at on this?
So,
on Snake Eyes. Where are you at on the reboot of the G.I. Joe movies, the Channing Tatum G.I. Joe movies?
I don't even know if I can sit here and say that I've seen, if there's two or three.
There's two.
I don't even know
there's
how many.
I'll admit I haven't seen the second one. I did see the first one. I enjoyed it. I'm not going to say it was good, but I enjoyed it.
I guess, I don't know. It doesn't matter if we need it. It's here. But yeah.
You got to sell toys. Mattel still has to sell toys. So here's Snake Eyes.
Remember the Battleship movie? Like, sometimes you just get things like Battleship. It's a great game.
Was that Alien? Was that Aliens attacking battleships?
Yeah. It was so bad that it was kind of endearing. I mean, it's a terrible movie, right? But my wife and I just play Battleship a lot if we go to one of the local breweries in this town. We get a little competitive.
You can't really see it. I'm not going to turn my camera because I'm lazy, but behind me in the closet is Electronic Battleship circa 1988.
Yeah.
We still have it. It runs off big old D batteries, and it is super fun, and on rainy days, it makes its appearance every once in a while. It's such a long game, though. Like, I forgot how long a game of Battleship takes, and it's the electronic kind too, so you can't cheat. Like, you have to put the code in. Like, it's got the little book, so you have to plug in the code, so it's, you know, computerized, so it's even if you move your ship but someone hits it, it's gonna go, and the little red light lights up. It's really fun.
They should, if anything, just give us like a 2021 version of the game.
Did you ever have travel? Did you ever have anybody who had travel battleships so you could play it in the car?
No.
They should have just called it travel. We're going to drop all the pieces on the floor of the car because there's just too many pieces in those little trays.
And who thought that was a good idea? That's the worst idea ever.
Hasbro. That's who thought it was a good idea.
Oh, they got a lot more money than I do. All right. This week's buffer battle features two things that I know for sure my selection is brand new. Joel, I'm assuming that what you went with is also new.
It's, given the fact. Yeah, it's been trending the last 2 weeks on Netflix. Perfect.
And I'm kind of surprised that you didn't go with The Black Widow because you saw that.
Yeah.
And maybe we can talk about that kind of at the end of the show. And I also finished Loki, which was very good. And I thought briefly about bringing Loki back, but Loki's previously battled and I don't want to be that guy. But that being said, I am going with a limited series on the buffer battle this week. My entry is The White Lotus, which is on HBO Max, and it seems like it's going to be released one episode at a time. And Joel, what do you have?
I went with How to Become a Tyrant, which is a kind of a docu-series on Netflix, and I binged it. They're nice little 27-minute episodes. You can just bang it out. And Peter Dinklage is the narrator of this documentary, so it's very good. It's very well done, and it's historical. It's good. Do you want me to go first here to make my case for it?
I think you went first last week.
I did go first last week. So I have
a decent premise for The White Lotus, and there's so much content out there. So let me just preface it with that. And I stumbled upon The White Lotus in between getting Space Jam from 1996 on the screen for my kids. And I saw through HBO Max The White Lotus. And it was really the Steve Zahn, Connie Britton. And I thought, well, it's got to be good if those two are in it. And I had a chance to interview Steve several years ago, and he was such a nice guy. So
he's one of the unsung heroes of the early 2000 comedy movement. You have That Thing You Do, which you and I both ride for that movie any chance we get. Saving Silverman is perhaps
so great.
The seminal comedy of my personal generation and friend group. Saving Silverman and Out Cold are the two most quoted movies in my friend group.
Well, it doesn't hurt that Comedy Central played Saving Silverman like every weekend for 10 years straight.
Yeah, well, he's our hero, and that's why we like him.
So The White Lotus is like a dark comedy, if I was going to have to put it into a category. The premise, The White Lotus follows the vacations of various hotel guests over the span of a week as they relax and rejuvenate in paradise, which is Hawaii, if I'm not mistaken. But with each passing day, a darker complexity emerges.
Now, is it Mike White? Is that who wrote it and directed it? Did I read that correctly?
So Mike is an EP, and I'm assuming, yeah, he's written and directed by Mike White. That is correct.
And if you're not familiar with Mike White, he's Mr. Schneebly in School of Rock, and he was on Survivor. He's a very accomplished writer. He wrote Nacho Libre, and just he and Jack Black have worked a ton together.
I didn't know that he wrote Dead Man on Campus and Orange County, kind of a sleeper favorite.
Orange County is a great movie. So he and Jack Black have collaborated a lot.
So I did not realize that. He also wrote The Emoji Movie, though.
I love The Emoji Movie.
I was okay with it. It certainly was panned. But then he was also on the staff with Dawson's Creek, Freaks and Geek. So, I mean, the guy's chops.
He's got serious chops.
Yeah. I
mean, he's the real deal.
The White Lotus is, so it starts off at the airport, and it's certainly one of the most interesting starts to a series that I can remember. You're sort of at the airport and you're introduced to one of your main characters, and this couple is sort of staring at him. So that is Shane Patton is the character, who's played by Jake Lacy. Long story short, and spoiler alert, the couple is like, hey, where are you coming from? And he says, whatever, this resort in Hawaii, the White Lotus. And they say, oh, someone died. And he he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they said he said he was on his honeymoon. And then he gets up and he looks out at the plane that he's waiting to board as they're sliding in a box that's labeled human remains. And he also had told this couple he was on his honeymoon, and he was, you could just kind of tell, like, so then right away you're like, okay, so this guy's wife is dead and he's here. And then they jump back 1 week earlier. And I'll be honest, like, I saw Steve Zahn, I saw Connie Britton, I started this, and I don't think if it weren't for that kind of, I mean, that opening hooked me. You know, some shows take a minute to get that hook. I was like, okay, now I have to see what happens. And it's very well acted, and it does have, as the premise alluded to, these kind of multiple storylines going on. But just to give you guys a synopsis of what happens in that first episode, a resort worker's water breaks. She goes in delivery on her first day on the job, and we're just introduced to these characters. Steve Zahn plays Mark Mossbacher, who is really worried about his health and waiting on a phone call to see if he may have testicular cancer. There's one scene where he's examining himself, and I don't know if it's Steve Zahn or if it's a stunt, you know what, but that was like kind of a little jarring. Yeah, a little bit. And I'm fine with whatever. But it was just sort of like, yeah, just a tad. And then Connie Britton plays Steve Zahn's wife, and she's this very successful CFO at a wellness company. Now, so there's just a lot of good support characters, and I'm curious to see how this pans out. I don't know how many episodes there are, but for sure they're getting dropped each and every week. And that's what I will say as a fan, both of us, Joel and I, of The Mayor of Easttown and The Undoing. There's something to be said about the series that are not just all put up at once, all the episodes where you are left wanting more. We kind of thought that was maybe over and done with, Joel, but I think with The White Lotus, it captures that same feeling of, wow, that was an entertaining, you know, 45-50 minutes. I'm looking forward to next Sunday.
Well, I think when you have HBO's trained their viewership back, they've got them trained again. Quarantine let them recalibrate the viewing I'm trying to use a big word, it's just not working. Recalibrate the viewers' behavior, and they've done that. They did that with The Undoing, and it was disappointing at the end, and then they blew us all away with Mayor of Easttown, and now they're throwing this White Lotus out, which I need to watch. I just haven't had a chance to. But Connie Britton, I know who she is now since I finally have watched Friday Night Lights. She's Mrs. Nice. Coach. She's Mrs. Coach Taylor, and she's great. What else is she? She's been in so much, but I think she was in that TV show Nashville and
American Horror Story.
See, I've confessed that before. I've never seen any of the American Horror Stories.
Sure. Yeah, Connie is just, I mean, she's great. You know, it's going to be good if she's part of it. She's got a good reputation. White Lotus has 6 episodes in total. Next episode drops, like I said, this Sunday, July 18th, and then every Sunday through August 15th. So I think it's worth checking out. Again, we are in over the position we find ourselves in. There's so much content, and it's overwhelming, but it is nice to find things because a dark comedy, Joel, if you think about it, like Mayor of Easttown had its moments that were comical, but I would not call that a dark comedy. I mean, it's certainly a drama, a very dramatic show. So this White Lotus is not entirely opposite of that, but it is certainly, the comedy is there, the Nick White writing is there, the characters are there. It's nice. I can't think of the last limited series or series that was a dark comedy that I started and got off to a really fantastic beginning like this did. So
yeah,
why it should win, everybody.
It's blown up all over social media too, in my social media feed. It's been what a lot of folks are watching. So I'm looking forward to it. You're making a strong case. It has a little bit of a disadvantage.
I just want to throw a quick one. Sure. I just want to mention, just 2 seconds, Jennifer Coolidge, Stifler's mom. She's great. I don't want to leave her out. She's hilarious. She hasn't aged. She's just, yeah, she's great. So that's my Jennifer Coolidge plug.
The rewatchables this week did the 25th anniversary of Legally Blonde, and she got a good 5 minutes of conversation on that podcast. She will always be from Best in Show to me. I know Absolutely. Stifler's Mom is but Best in Show is such an important movie in the grand scheme. And Jennifer Coolidge, she steals those movies. She and Parker Posey steal Best in Show, and it is not so even close. Good. They're both throwing 200 miles an hour the entire movie. So now you say that Coolidge is in it. That's another reason I have to check it out.
Absolutely.
So my movie is also a dark comedy, if you will. My content, it's called How to Become a Tyrant, and it's on Netflix, and it's 6 episodes. And what's dark and what's comedic about it is really how predictable these regimes across the world have been, that have been, you know, run by dictators or tyrants, and there really is a playbook, and the playbook goes all the way back to ancient civilization, really. And I worked in politics for a brief period of time, and even the good guys use tools and plays out of this playbook of tyranny. It really just is. Unfortunately, you have to play with these elements to kind of get where you need to go or where you want to go. And let me just read the titles of the first of the 6 episodes, Tony.
Do it.
Episode 1, Seize Power. Episode 2, Crush Your Rivals. Episode 3, Reign Through Terror. Number 4 is Control the Truth. Number 5 is Create a New Society.
Wow.
And number 6 is Rule Forever. And so those are the 6 steps to becoming a tyrant. And
I hate that it could, well, obviously there's a lot of correlations to the times that we find ourselves in, but yep. There's the part of me that's just like, gosh. So we've learned enough lessons from tyrants over the years.
And well, like the thing is that they're using the plays that fit what they're right. trying to accomplish. And the Seize Power episode really talks about how Hitler came to be. And there's a lot of parallels to how propaganda has been used in countries in modern times to manipulate the audience, to separate them from a population they may be scared of because they don't understand their culture, or they feel that they control aspects of life that are holding you back. And I'm not trying to get political. It doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. Both sides in the United States have used some of these tactics to manipulate. But we're talking about Idi Amin. They talk about Muammar Gaddafi. They talk about Kim Jong-il. They talk about Hitler. And, you know, basically anyone, Saddam Hussein, any dictator in the modern, you know, in the 19th and 20th century are discussed in this documentary. And it's just really interesting. I'm a big consumer of leadership and management, and I studied communication. I studied political speech writing. It just really checked all of the boxes for me. And it was a really entertaining short documentary too. They used good little animations and recreations, and they talked to some really interesting scholars. And what I really appreciated is there was no real opinion being thrown into this. It was, here was the cause, here was the effect, here's how, looking back historically, how we can deduce and reasonably say Tyrant X used this tactic to take another step in the right direction. And so, but what's also kind of cool about it though is they can kind of show how this map and this blueprint, you can use the psychology of it, and you can show how that you can almost sit in your living room and say, okay, yes, I don't want to use propaganda to create a genocide and to murder millions of people. But one of the things that Hitler did do was he assembled a team around him that all had a specific set of skills that any good manager, if you are humble enough to say, okay, here's what I'm not good at. I mean, you can look at these steps and see how they also can be used for good, not just for evil. So I think that it was compelling because it's not just beating you over the head of, okay, yep, Hitler's awful. Kim Jong-un is awful, or Kim Jong-il is awful. Saddam Hussein is awful. And I mean, but it all, and I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want to get clipped and say, Joel says so-and-so was actually a good leader. Like, that's not what I'm saying.
No, I understand.
But it shows how the tools can be used for good too.
I mean, you're not alone with your thoughts on how to become a tyrant. If you go to Rotten Tomatoes, it doesn't have a critic score, but the audience consensus is 93%. So, I mean,
see, I didn't even look into that deep. I just saw it was ranked eighth on the trending, and so I checked it out, and I didn't realize it was a docuseries until I got rolling. And Dinklage is such a good narrator too. His voice is so good for this type of storytelling, and just really, really, really interesting.
Well, and I know it's not the same thing, but certainly historical figures, events, good, bad, horrific, true crime podcasts. I mean, you're talking about things that have maybe never been as popular. I mean, there's millions of people that are tuning into podcasts that are chronicling terrible things that have happened. And like, I've listened and watched a lot of that stuff, and sometimes it's overwhelming. And sometimes you feel like, and I don't know, obviously, Joel, it doesn't seem like this is the case with How to Become a Tyrant, but sometimes you'll see like with I can't remember, was it the Night Stalker we talked about on this show? One of the critiques of that was it was like three episodes too long. Like, they get lost in the filler, right? Like, you know, the who, the what, the where, and the why, because it's happened 20 or 30 years ago. So I wonder, does that happen with How to Become a Tyrant, or is it not? They're assuming you know who these people are, you know what they did, but here's maybe what steps they took along the way to getting into positions where people were like, yeah, we're with you, whatever you say, boss.
They don't really talk about the end result as much as they talk about the steps that got. So like the first episode, really, just for example, it really outlines Hitler's megalomania, how he believed he was chosen to lead these people. It even talks about when he was in a foxhole in World War I, how he claims he heard a voice telling him to move, and he moved, and about 30 seconds later a mortar hit that spot and killed three other soldiers, and he was spared. So now he believes there's some divine intervention that's given him, that he has been chosen for some purpose. He then, after being, you know, run down in poverty and being imprisoned, he joined the army, and he got assigned to as an intelligence officer to a meeting of an anti-Semitic group, where he was supposed to just observe and basically identify if they were like a terrorist cell. And instead of doing that job, he actually stands up at a microphone and shares his beliefs in this anti-Semitic group. And now he's the leader of this group, and they just proliferated from there. And that's how they formed the Nazi Party. So it talked about those little steps that he took. That's how he took power. He saw where the German people had been disenfranchised post the Treaty of Peace after World War I, showed them a way to prosperity. And then, you know, he controlled the message. He controlled the truth. Goebbels was his propaganda king. And they talk about that. They talk about the different aspects of his leadership. And that's just the first episode. And then in other episodes, they go into more detail on some of the other steps. So it's just so well done on such a heavy-handed topic. It's not glorifying these guys either. You don't walk away being like, oh, I guess maybe Gaddafi was kind of sweet. Like, it's right. It's not anything like that. It's just really, if you like history like I do, it was just about as entertaining a six-episode series as I've watched.
That's good. And it does seem like there are, obviously, we're still getting some of these like produced how to's, survivors guy that this makes me think of our friend Steve DeVore, who's from Muscatine, Iowa, where this podcast originates. One of the producers of Survivor's Guide to Prison, which is a documentary that came out in 2018, produced alongside and directed by Matthew Cook. But we are still getting a lot of those, like the how to or the
no Danny Survivor's Trejo Guide. In this movie, though.
Right.
No Danny Trejo in this series.
Danny Trejo makes everything better. Well, I'm going to make the verdict. I think it seems like both of our entries this week in the buffer battle are a little bit on the dramatic side. But there is something to be said about quality history, and certainly the events and the people profiled in How to Become a Tyrant have, you know, stood the test of time, right or wrong. And this seems to be something that is going to be rewatched more so than The White Lotus. And I say that having put The White Lotus into the ring, but I think ultimately, you know, I think they're both worth watching, certainly, right? Obviously.
I think so. Then, I think it's
more people are going to be inclined to check out How to Become a Tyrant because more people like history than they would a limited series. And plus, it's tough sometimes with, you know, HBO Max is still getting their legs under them as far as number of people that they can potentially reach. And Netflix obviously has to still be number one, right? With maybe Disney Plus on their heels. So I think How to Become a Tyrant advances. And again, it doesn't sound like it's overly depressing.
No,
and it's 30 minutes. It's, like you said, there's 30 minute episodes.
Yeah.
And that's good. And I think I think about that often, you know, given that we're still dealing with a pandemic and interesting times. And again, having said that, The White Lotus is a dark comedy. So, right, there's going to be some heavy stuff, but it's kind of packaged with some laughs and some ridiculous scenarios. But it also is an opportunity for people, you know, I think if anything, 2020, so many people read more or watched documentaries or listen to podcasts about true life events. So that's where I feel like the person in me that works in the education field feels like history is always great. And if it's done well, it's worth six episodes of 30 minutes.
Yeah. And I think my whole thing is I'm super pro education, and I was very blessed as a student here in Muscatine, and I can't speak to the current state, and that's not me being negative. I just don't know. But we were taught, you know, about Black Wall Street. We were taught about a lot of these things that they discuss in how to become a tyrant. And just because I think one of the big phrases and cliches of the world is if we don't understand history, we're bound to repeat it. And for me, that was always a big thing that my dad talked about. My brother has a master's degree in history. Like, history is a huge part of my familial conversations. And I think my advice and my recommendation on how to become a tyrant is, right, wrong, or indifferent, January 6th is one of the most important dates in American history, in modern American history. September 11th, we're coming up to the 20th anniversary of that also important event of modern American history. No matter which side you're on January 6th, I think this docuseries gives you some understanding of what tools were used by leadership, not necessarily in our government's leadership, but maybe leadership in some of these organizations that are prolific right now. That some of the tactics, some of the ways that media is being used, and some of the ways that social media propaganda, which not all propaganda is bad either, but the way the propaganda has been used to manipulate certain demographics of people. And I think it's just really interesting. Myself as a communications person, as a person who's been a journalist, as a person who has been a speechwriter, you know, it's just it just was so interesting. And so I encourage everyone, if you truly value world history and world politics and world government, watch this this docuseries and come up with your own opinions. I'm not telling you what to think. I just want you to watch it so you can think for yourself.
All right, there you have it. This week's winner in the buffer battle is How to Become a Tyrant on Netflix. And if you want to watch the second place, White Lotus, it's on HBO Max with episodes on Sunday. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our guilty pleasures, confessions, and dress socks and Crocs right here on the buffer. Hang on. Welcome back, friends, to the Buffer Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Anchor.fm. The biggest thing you can do for this show is rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your coworkers, and interact with us on social media. And one of these days, Joel and I will be able to purchase those electric cars and DeLoreans that we so want. We're going to have all...
I just want a moped. That's all I want.
You just want a little moped. You're getting closer to that moped, I feel like.
We'll talk about that in dress socks and Crocs, maybe.
All right. Buffer guilty pleasures. So I went first with the battle, so I will defer to you, sir, with the guilty pleasures for this week. What do you have?
So I talked about it a little bit in the opening. I'm going back into just trashy reality television. And no, everybody, my guilty pleasure is not binge watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians, even though I know that they're done. I can proudly confess that I never watched a single episode of that show.
Wow.
But my guilty pleasure this week is I absolutely adore Big Brother. It is such a fun show. Ugh. Hey, I know you and I have talked about this before. I love it, though. My wife and I watch it together. We DVR it. We often fall asleep in the middle of it and then wake up just at the end and then have to rewind it and see where we fell asleep. But it's just stupidly fun for us. And I'm a little bit, maybe I've learned a little too much from the docuseries How to Become a Tyrant. I'm a little bit megalomaniacal enough to think that if I could just get on the show, I'm pretty sure I could win it, because I'm
don't
not.
Don't you think it's scripted? Though it's
no
fake,
I really right? I don't think it's fake. And I actually have, so one of my former players and the son of a former Muscatine superintendent Nick Williams is married to a woman who was on the show, and I have had some conversations with Erin, and she has confirmed that it is in fact not scripted. And she kind of wishes she had, because she was one that unfortunately made some unfortunate comments in her time on the show and was now this is pre-cancel culture, but probably would have been canceled if I don't believe it's scripted there. Now some of the diary room stuff might be like they get some writer help saying, hey, why don't you say it this way, it might be a little bit more entertaining. But sure, as far as like the competitions and who gets voted out, I don't believe it is scripted.
I'm not going to nitpick it, but I've certainly seen it enough to know that it's not for me. And that's, I'm also surprised that it's still around.
Well, people frankly, like me buy a hook, line, and sinker.
Talk about reality TV shows at the jump, Big Brothers. You're just the reason that we still have Big Brother.
You're welcome. You're welcome, America.
All right. Guilty pleasure for me is a music entry, because I feel like with the buffer, we could talk about things like music. And it's not, I mean, it's new within the last maybe month or so, but it's the Counting Crows and Butter Miracle Sweet One. I think Adam Duritz has done a great job making the rounds on different podcasts and TV shows promoting this album. I've always liked the Counting Crows. This Butter Miracle Sweet One is meant to be listened to in its entirety. All the songs blend together or lead into each other, and they have this really cool YouTube video that's about 27 minutes long, and it really tells the story of the album. So I have been in the last 2 weeks, I've probably listened to that album in its entirety, I would say at least a dozen times, because it doesn't take that long to listen to it, and it's very well done. And then I was kicking myself because it wasn't too many years ago when I had a plethora, I had a lot of tickets that I was giving away.
Is that what plethora means? Is a lot?
It does.
Thank for you, those listening. Three amigos. That's what taught me what the word plethora means.
I felt bad that I didn't go see The Counting Crows at the Adler Theater in Davenport, Iowa, when I had the opportunity to.
I did.
See?
I was there.
I just think at the time I hadn't been in sync with Counting Crows, but certainly August and everything after is one of the first CDs that I owned that I listened to on my Sony Discman with the little plug-in speakers. So if you're a music fan, if you're a Counting Crows fan, even if you're not, it's worth checking out, and I hope that you'll do so. All right, we're going to enter
I also think that it's important that you, when you're talking about the 27-minute YouTube video, I mean,
yes,
Sweet, Butter Miracle's Sweet One is Sweet is spelled S-U-I-T-E, like a music suite. It's
correct.
It's through composed. Durrett's really, these guys really approached this from a very cerebral avenue, which I appreciate as someone who also approaches music in a very similar way. And I'll say this, every guy I knew in the music school at Morningside College that could play the piano learned how to play Colorblind, because it was such an important song that all the girls, if you could play Colorblind and sing along with it, you probably were getting a date that evening. That's just how it seemed to roll.
Oh, that is so great. All right, let's enter the buffer confessional, everybody.
Confessions.
This is just turning into things that are going to make my wife angry. I think we should just rename it to confessing things that my wife likes, that I have lied about seeing to get out of having to rewatch it.
This isn't designed to get you into marital trouble. This is just supposed to be fun.
But it's one of those things.
Maybe you just need to start telling the truth and just watching movies with your spouse.
Well, it's one of those things this movie is on the list of things that, and I don't know if it's certainly, it goes both ways. Guys are just as guilty as ladies of going back to things that you really enjoy. You have your favorites that you think about them at random times. Next thing you know, you're watching it and your significant other is like, what are you doing? Or your significant other will say, hey, I haven't seen the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants in a while. And I go, oh, it's so good. But like, we've both seen it enough. Like, we don't need to rewatch it. So I'm here to share in the buffer confessional that I have lied about seeing the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, which, by the way, I didn't know is considered one of the best movies of the 2000s.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times, and it's good. And I'm not even saying it from like a pervy standpoint. Like Blake Lively's a good actress, and this was kind of her first, you know, big time role. And same with America Ferrera.
Like, I know that it's not the same thing, but I feel like I love Now and Then. Do I need to see Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants? Is Now and Then not the same? Am I wrong? Like,
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants take the formula of Now and Then and just do it with pants? I don't even know if pants are a part of it. I don't know.
And I'm struggling to remember Now and Then categorically, so I'll just be honest. I think the comparison that I'll make...
A group of female friends that remember things and a summer they spent together and then they get older.
I think the thing that I remember it more of is thinking of the bonding experience and the group of guy experience that the American Pie movies were, and take the raunch out of it and take the kind of the sex out of it, but just think of that pure friendship. People who maybe even shouldn't be as good of friends as they are good friends because there is a tie that binds them. That's kind of what I think the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants does super well. And I think that's why it resonates so strongly, similarly to why American Pie resonated so much with men of that specific age as well.
So you would say to me, go watch Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Yep, wow. Unequivocally.
It's disappointing. All right, what are you confessing this week, Joel?
Well, we've been over this too, that your wife and I have similar taste in movies. So
yeah, but I just said that I love Now and Then. I love Fried Green Tomatoes. Like, well, I can check just as many boxes.
But you don't have to.
I need to.
But I don't know why you have to say one's better than the other. Just go watch it all and consume it all and appreciate it all for what it is. Listen, fruit is fruit, but some bananas are better than other bananas. But at the end of the day, the banana is still a good banana. So
I don't want the Notebook banana. I don't want the Traveling Pants banana.
Well, you're maybe missing out on a good dose of potassium. With that said, my confession, it's summer camp season. I had two baseball players out this week because they were off at summer camp. Mm. And it made me think of summer camp movies, which is just a great formula. I think I'd sent a GIF this week to you of from Heavyweights of Ben Stiller doing one of his speeches in Heavyweights. I've seen Heavyweights. I've seen a lot of summer camp movies. I've not seen any, specifically the first or really any of the Friday the 13th movies. I have not seen any of Jason Voorhees. Wow. And that's how I know that happens at Camp Crystal Lake. And I just have not seen them. And I don't like horror movies. And I just have, it's never, have never had the reason to be compelled to watch them. So I've not seen those.
Did you watch Fear Street Part 2, 1978?
Not yet. I started it and I realized I wasn't in the right place to do it. I was doing too much other stuff. I knew I couldn't focus on it, so I didn't watch
it. Well, even by just starting that, you've watched Friday the 13th, because Fear Street 1978 Part 2, whatever, is filmed at the same location that they used for Camp Crystal Lake. So you've seen it, essentially. The thing to keep in mind, spoiler alert, is that Jason was not the killer.
Right.
In the original.
I know that. I know it was his mom. So I know enough. I've been to enough trivia nights that I've learned what the premise is. I just have never seen it.
I feel like I haven't seen it in so long. It's just not going to be as good. I don't think that's a movie that's aged well, and I'm sure I'm going to get hate for that. But I would caution, like, the first time I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I was like, this is terrible. That was my opinion as like a 12-year-old. It's like, this is terrifying, but it's also kind of like poorly made. And then I saw like the original The Hills Have Eyes, and I was like, oh, this is good. So I like, is it required viewing? I don't know. I mean, maybe so you could check a box. And this is coming from the horror aficionado. I don't know. I would say you're okay having not seen it. But have you seen Freddy versus Jason, at least, when they just kick each other?
No, I haven't.
So that would be, and I know that people are going to be like, are you kidding me? You diss the original, the classic. First of all, Halloween is the greatest horror movie ever, period. It set the bar. Friday the 13th is fine. It's obviously in the top 10. But like, Freddy versus Jason is just ridiculous. And that is a comedy as much as it is a horror film. But don't start there, and don't start at like Jason X or when he goes to space.
Which one is Paul Rudd in? I saw an interview where he's like, technically that was my first movie, but I don't claim it.
Five? I don't know. I don't want to piss off the horror fans, because I am sitting here. I'm excited about Halloween Kills.
You are a horror fan.
I can't get enough of the horror. All right. So we're going to wrap up this week's episode of The Buffer with some dress socks and Crocs, parenting and life, funny moments, wins and losses.
Dress socks and Crocs.
Oh, friend. I think, did I go first with the confession? I think I did, right? So
yeah, yep.
Okay, so you can start us out on dress socks and Crocs.
I just really don't have that much, other than the fact that I think my baseball team is cursed.
Oh, no.
our last 9 games have been rained out or canceled because teams being unavailable. So we were supposed to play. So we haven't played a game since the 3rd week of June, and it's just sucks. It's just, I feel so bad for our kids because they're working so hard and they're getting so much better, and they haven't had a chance to test it out yet because of just rain. It's like every time we're supposed to play a game, we've had unprecedented, almost drought-like conditions in Iowa this year, but for some reason, on the specific Tuesday or Thursday or Wednesday or Saturday and Sunday that we're supposed to play, it rains. And so it's getting to be like we feel snake bit almost. The other coaches and I were texting each other tonight. It's like, I don't know what we need to do. Do we need to go get a bucket of fried chicken and sacrifice it Major League 2 style? Like, does Joe Boone need some rum? I'm not sure what we have to do to break this curse. Sure. And just like in Bull Durham, you know, they needed a rain day. We need some dry weather when we play, because it's we've got our state tournament next week, so our season ends next weekend. And so but we need to play. We just need to play. And hopefully I'm trying to schedule some games for next week, but it's just not that easy to do. And so there's another team in Muscatine that we could play, but we've played them several times already this year, and we're probably going to play them in the state tournament. I kind of don't want to show them some of the things that we've been developing and pitching wise and stuff. So I'm full on in the Earl Weaver mode. Like, I'm trying to figure out a way for our team to shock the world and win the state championship, because I think we've gotten that much better. So we're defeated. We haven't won a game this season. We have 2 ties, but we've not won. But I reckon to think that we're going to beat some people and surprise some people this next weekend. But we just got to get a couple at bats under our belt before that tournament.
Well, and from what I've seen in the forecast, it looks like it should be decent. So hopefully that state tournament will be a dry one, because you're right, it has rained a lot here. I feel like this week my comment is the summer and how busy things have been. I saw a friend of mine this afternoon, and they asked me the question that I get asked a lot. I work in education. How do you feel having your summers off? I don't. I'm working all summer, 12 months. I had today off. I took tomorrow off. Still working, doing that. But then I said to this person, I feel like our weekends have just been as busy. And specifically this coming Saturday, July 17th, we're going to a wedding. Congratulations to Libby and Isaiah Phillips. I don't get to attend a lot of weddings that often, as someone that has also DJed weddings for over 12 to 15 years. So I find myself, Joel, like, again, I've been to a lot of weddings.
But this is when you get to just be.
Yeah, but I've worked more weddings than I've been to. So I don't always know how to be a guest.
just don't grab a microphone. Sit at the table and do your thing.
I don't even want to think about like the entertainment or any of that or the flow of events. I just want to go. But is that weird that like I can't? So maybe for people that are listening, think about either what you do for a living or a hobby, and then when you're a spectator or on the sidelines, do you feel, and I won't feel like, oh, I'm not going to be the guy that's judging, because that's stupid, because I'm a guest and I'm excited to be a guest. But there's just part of me, like, it's in my soul, I think, that's like, sometimes I don't think I know how to just be.
So my advice,
I'm excited to just be a guest on Saturday.
So my advice, I'm not sure you're asking for it, but I'm going to give it anyway. So I used to be a terrible wedding date for my wife, because I am a very extroverted personality. And oftentimes when we were at a wedding, I was in it, like as a groomsman or an usher or something like that. So I had places I needed to be. I had a speech I needed to give, and she was oftentimes not in the wedding party on the other side. So I've learned, and I just did this a couple weeks ago, that once my duties are over and you don't have any duties, you're just there as a guest, that the best way to be and be a good guest is to stay with my wife. And mm-hmm. you know, if she wants to go dance, let's go dance. If she wants to, and I'm not saying that I'm you know, having to be a slave to my spouse. It's just, I think it's easier for you to be when you're trying to be the couple that you came with, instead of you trying to take over and operating in your comfort zone. Create that couple's comfort zone, because then you can just feed off each other and, you know, have as much fun as you guys want to have, and go down that road, because there's going to be some big personalities at that wedding. And I know, yeah. And I think the thing is just create your own little ecosystem and have as much fun as you guys can have in your small circle, and don't feel like you need to have everyone else thinking about the good time you're having.
So you're saying I shouldn't do what I did like 2 years ago at a wedding when my wife's friend got married and she was a bridesmaid and I left twice. It was downtown.
That's a bad,
I was bar hopping with people and then came back. That's what I'm saying though. And that's great advice. It's maybe the most poignant, prolific thing that's been said on this podcast.
Which is shocking, that it's me that said it, because usually I'm the hot take machine. Because
in November, my wife's other good friend is getting married. Shout out to Rhiannon and John. And she's a bridesmaid. And you'll love this. They're getting married very close to a casino.
Yes. So
my inclination was like, I could just leave the reception and go gamble, and my wife wouldn't notice. I'm 6'5", over 300 pounds, 1,000% sure. Notice
people
if I'm gone.
Notice you when you leave the room.
And I also did this at another wedding, now that I think about it, that my wife wasn't in, but that we were at together. I left and went and gambled with strangers. I just need to
see. I did stuff like that too when I was younger. Put. It's just
this is not younger. These examples are all less than 3 years old.
Just
so my lesson to myself is just to just literally just sit and stay like a dog.
Well, yeah, just be a wedding date instead of, because I'm the king of, and I think you might have the same problem. I'm the king of being at a wedding and it happened at the last one. There's an older gentleman came up, asked how I had known the groom. And I just said, you know, we were freshmen and we were in the same class in college. And, you know, we were both from bigger towns, relatively speaking. And I said, I was from Muscatine. He's like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so. Like, he, in his profession, he worked very closely with a guy from Muscatine who happens to be super close friends with my father. And those are the side of things that I get sucked into. And all of a sudden I'm 45 minutes into a conversation with this guy while my wife is sitting at a table waiting. And the reason I was up is I was supposed to be getting her a drink, you know? Oh, so Lord. It's like, I've gotten better at the, you know, it was great talking to you. Maybe I'll catch up with you later, but I got to go be the good husband, which it took me 15 years of marriage, I think, to realize that you have to sometimes be the good husband in a social setting like that. And it took me having to have a job. You and I are both now in first times in professional careers where we don't have to sell stuff. We don't have to be on, you know, trying to maybe generate revenue for whatever entity we're with. So I think that's an important part of it too. I think you'll enjoy it if you just go and kind of just chill and follow the lead of your wife.
Well, I'll definitely have an update on next week's episode of The Buffer. Please, friends, rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Anchor.fm. It helps us out a lot. And check us out on Facebook and on Twitter. This week's winner, How to Become a Tyrant on Netflix, defeating the White Lotus on HBO Max. Joel, I think we'll do it again next week. Sound good?
Yeah, we might have to record a little bit earlier in the week, though, because I've got, like I said, state baseball towards the end.
That works for me. I got some time off next week. All right, friends, until then, have a great rest of your insert whenever you're listening to this. And hopefully I'll have survived that wedding. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, bye. See ya.